Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Monday morning, 12 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel time. Libby Post is here. Good morning, Libby.
Good morning, Ray. Nice to be back.
Rosemary Armeo is here. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
And Alan Shartok, you're always here, and welcome back, old boy.
Yippee.
Everybody have a nice Skippy. Easter today? Passover.
Yeah. We had a nice Passover. Yeah. Did you have a good?
Oh, it was terrific. We went up to the Dreamaway Lodge up there above the hills
in Dreamaway land. Yes.
Dreamaway, which if nobody's ever been to, is really kooky.
Yeah.
And
why is it kooky?
Well, because it has that sort of kooky feel to it.
I don't know what that is.
It's a little alternative.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
And it was a great, very adequate but short ceremony. Food was fantastic, and Little Noah was the hit of the year. 77 people.
That's great.
We had no children for Easter egg hunting. We had a huge dinner that induced coma, a family brawl.
Oh, nice.
And then
family brawl.
Induced,
tell us about the brawl. What was the issue?
I'm not exactly sure, Alan. That's usually how it is in our family.
Is it always one uncle who starts it?
It was the nephew this time, fighting with his mother, my sister.
Oh, really?
We don't know what happened. She was storming out before we
did she come back?
No, she didn't.
Oh, my God. Wow.
But she might have. We were all in the food-induced coma by that time.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh,
good
for you. May not have been awake.
God, it was tame at my house.
Yeah.
Very tame.
We had
12 people, including us, for a lovely Seder. The woman who went to find the Afikoman was in her 40s. She also did the four questions.
The Afikoman, for all of you out there who may not be familiar
hide the matzah.
And the youngest there usually gets it and ransoms it back.
Right, and the same goes for asking the four questions. The youngest got to ask it. And I'm no longer the youngest in the room anymore, so that's great.
Well, we didn't have any brawls, unfortunately, for our Easter. No. But
who
we did
came?
Make... Well, we went over to my in-law's place. We had a little shindig and made it home in time to hunker down and watch the Ten Commandments last night. Which is a family tradition.
That was on
last night. It was last night?
And before it was something else, another film.
Oh, the Bible
film.
Thing?
Yeah.
I watched the basketball game.
Oh, that was on one TV, and then the other TV had the Ten Commandments. And the other tradition is I always fall asleep before the end. But I know it turns out well.
You know how it's going to end, right?
Yeah.
We all know.
Exactly.
Let my people go.
He comes down from the mountain, I fall asleep every time. It's the Roundtable. Hey, you can join in our conversation. Roundtable@WAMC.org is the email address. You can also comment on our webpage, WAMC.org/roundtable. Today's post is 4/6/15 panel. That's today's date, 4/6/15 panel. And we'd love to hear from you. If you keep your comments relatively brief, you have a shot of getting them on the air. Try to make them sensible so that we can not ask, well, what the heck does that mean? That's always a good way to go.
Right.
All right, so the big news, one of the big news items this morning, and it's enormous, I think, from a journalistic standpoint, Rolling Stone magazine promising to improve its editorial practices following a top journalism school's scathing review of a widely discredited story about an alleged college rape, but it is not firing any of the people responsible for the mistakes. The Columbia University Graduate School of Journalism issued a report last night calling the November 2014 story, A Rape on Campus, a story of journalistic failure that was avoidable. Rolling Stone managing editor Will Dana issued an apology on the website, and the author, Sabrina Rubin, Erdely, I believe it is, issued a separate apology. The magazine's publisher, Jan Wenner, however, told the New York Times that Erdely would continue to write for the magazine and that neither she nor editor would be fired. And Rosemary, I'll let you go first.
Okay, yeah, I can just go off on this. I read the entire report last night. I'm going to require students to read it today.
Right?
It's 13,000 words, I think.
Longer
it's pretty. We should point out that Rolling Stone invited this review and turned over like 400 and some pages of the reporter's notes and sat down for interviews, except for the final kind of legal things. Their lawyer said, no, hold on, because they are going to be sued. They have. That article did terrible damage to the fraternity involved where the alleged gang rape took place. It did damage to the University of Virginia, and it sure did a lot of damage to journalists. People think this kind of work is how we do it.
It may
there
have
were
done,
basic errors.
It may have also done tremendous damage to women who have been raped.
You're right. You're right. It even says that in the report, yeah. that now it's made clear, this leaves the impression that women lie about sexual assaults.
Well, so, some do. There is a premise here that some do. We've seen an example of it.
Well, they do, but you're usually protected by good police work or good reporting. This was horrible reporting. I mean, usually I read these corrections or these like look backs, and I go, "Oh, wow, that could have happened to me. Wow, that's thank God I didn't do it." But this one I read and said, "Wow, I just wouldn't have done that." And over again, the worst thing, the biggest mistake according to the report, is that on the night of the alleged attack, the woman who was the source for the story, the alleged victim, told Rolling Stone, "Three of my friends were there, and I told them about it." Rolling Stone never found or talked to those three people.
Well, even worse, they took the word of the victim, with quotes around it, that what had been said by the three friends and posted those comments.
Right. Mm-hmm. Without making clear that it was simply the victim remembering what they had told her. They made it sound as if they had spoken to those people. The victim never said, no, you know, don't talk to them. It was just not good. The reporter never went physically to the fraternity where this happened. I mean, that's just a rule of journalism, that you need to physically go where the action is. You don't know why, but usually something turns up. And so basic reporting, like, was there a party that night that the victim says, I was raped at a party? That turned out not to be true. And the story was pulled apart in a couple of days by reporters who took these really simple steps. It's just terrible, terrible reporting.
So according to the Columbia Graduate School of Journalism's report, there were failures across the board. So you had reporting failures, editing failures, editorial supervision, and fact-checking.
But the report also says this is a story about reporting and editing. And so that's why I find it amazing that the magazine is not going to fire the editor who did terrible work. He's looking at this blank in the story, like, and he says, oh, are you going to talk to these people? She goes, the reporter goes, no, I can't find them. So he goes, okay, well, let's give them made-up names. What? That's fiction.
So the reason nobody's getting fired is because the editorial people have a stake in the blame also.
Yeah. So the editor's not going to get fired, and they are saying, yes, we'll work with that reporter again. I'm sorry. She's ruined her career as far as I'm concerned. I will never trust anything that has her byline on it. Would you, Libby?
It's for me, you know, here's the deal. This is a horrible situation. And honestly, when I was away, I watched Law & Order SVU. It was ripped from the headlines this week. It was definitely this story.
You think they move them around just because of what's in the news
might.
At that moment?
Well, they do. They do. But, you know, what this does is set back the ability of women who have been raped, who have been sexually assaulted, to step forward and be taken seriously. This is, you know,
right.
At the end of SVU, Olivia Benton says to the president of the college, this set us back, and the college president was complicit in all of this too, this set us back 30 years. This also, and there was another piece in the Times, there was an opinion piece in the Times by a woman who was raped at UVA in 1998, and the guy got a letter. He was found guilty on campus, and he got a letter in his school record, and nothing ever happened to him. You know, the fact of the matter is, these kinds of situations get sensationalized, and then the thousands upon thousands of women who are sexually assaulted on campus, you know, are not given the support that they are given. You know, at one point you say, well, the campus should be the ones to take care of this. Especially with this, the cops, the outside cops should have been brought in, but you wonder how seriously they would have taken the story. You know, it's always about the women having to prove themselves that they have been raped or they've been sexually assaulted.
And now that will be worse.
And now it's going to be even harder for women, and it's an unfortunate situation. And Alan said to me before, well, you have a son and he has a son, and you know what happens if he got accused? And we, you know, I raised him, right? My part, Lynn and I raised this a good man.
Wait. I take strong objection to this.
But the fact of the matter is, yes, he could be accused at some point.
That's the point.
Right. He
the
could
point
be accused.
Is, the point
anybody
is, anybody
could
get,
be accused.
The point is, if you've raised your son right and he's a terrific kid, I know that. And then somebody comes along and says something terrible, and makes up a big fat lie, that gets the kid into the process, and his life may be ruined.
I
well, no
that.
Life was ruined in this case because they didn't even give the real name of the person. In fact, there was no person.
Well, wait a second now. The
well,
life,
no,
the,
I
the
think
the
no
life
name.
Of the university was ruined.
Right.
And oh, universities
and
are
and
people. That's right.
Citizens woman,
United.
I don't think this woman made this up. The woman
I think
was,
she
really?
Greatly
you
embellished
think
it.
She made everything up. I think that
the
she
original
was
report,
assaulted.
The original report that went to the university and that set this off, that brought her to the attention of rape crisis counselors, was she said she performed multiple oral sex that night. But where it happened, who led it, the fact that she was pushed down on a table that broke and then men jumped on top of her, they did nothing to verify what should have been easily verifiable. Medical records, how about the bloody dress? They never found that. She said, oh, my mother threw it out. And then she makes up this whole guy that they named Drew, who mm-hmm. was a lifeguard she worked right. with. There's no lifeguard.
And Michael writes to us and says, in one sentence, shouldn't the alleged victim be prosecuted?
For what? Talking to the newspapers.
I'll tell you what, up a story.
I have a question for Rosemary about fact checkers, but let's take a quick break and we'll also check the mailbag. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Valley Home Improvement, designing and building kitchens, bathrooms, interiors, and additions throughout the Pioneer Valley. Love your home, valleyhomeimprovement.com. East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massage for couples and individuals, eastheaven.com. Lori Ilvesacker, Coldwell Banker Village Green Realty, Woodstock, a professional realtor with 30 years of experience, specializing in the greater Woodstock area home market and in finding acreage for building new, 845-901-6129. And the Albany Institute of History and Art now presenting the exhibition Walter Lount Palmer, Painting the Moment, albanyinstitute.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable, where the during-break conversations are often more heated than the on-air conversations. It's 25 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff in for Joe. We're joined by Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Shartok.
I feel like I'm back at Easter dinner. We're going to brawl again.
I don't know if there'll be any brawls.
No. Yeah.
No walking out.
No one's walking out.
No one's walking out. Okay.
Yeah. Well, let's all watch the Ten Commandments at 10 a.m. All right?
Okay, fine.
All right, you have another email for us, Alan?
Yes, and that's from Ryan. Of course women have to prove they are raped. What are you talking about, Libby? You're saying that women shouldn't have to prove it?
No.
People are in it.
I never said that.
I'm not done yet.
Oh, boy. All right, calm down.
Pass the pork chops. People are innocent until...
not at my house.
People are innocent...
I'll take them.
...until proven guilty. If one woman is being raped is too many, and it is, then so is one innocent man going to jail. You're assuming so much, Libby. She lied. Period.
Libby's not assuming anything. There's a huge project just done in Illinois that's about to that's making national waves. It took a look at prosecution rates for rape. And overwhelmingly, the women were not taken seriously mm-hmm. at any level by police, by prosecutors. The excuses were that there's not enough evidence, no one was there to corroborate it. Libby's point is a good one.
Okay, there was one of the, and again, Libby made the point that the actual review of this report is 3,000 or 4,000 words longer than the actual Rolling Stone article.
Right.
One of the complaints was about fact-checking. And so they said the fact checkers were not assertive enough. And what went wrong there, Rosemary?
Well, that's a really interesting thing. In fact, our organization took a look at this. They want to beef up their fact checking in light of what happened. The young women, I think it was two young women, did, and they didn't name them. The report did not name these because they were so, they were
not
junior,
interns,
they
clearly,
were not
right?
involved in the decision. They raised excellent questions like,
who
can we
these,
get this
who
person?
Who are these women now?
These were the fact checkers who
oh,
worked for
Rolling
the magazine.
Okay, great.
Oh, for,
yeah,
for
Rolling
for
Stone.
Rolling?
They worked for
yeah.
Rolling Stone, but they were junior employees.
Glad
and they
I'm here
said
to make everything clear.
Thank you. We rely on you to
Dr.
do
Exposition.
That clarity.
Thank you very
yes.
much.
Yeah. Captain Obvious.
Right. All right.
Okay, so they raise a lot of questions like, we need to talk to this person. Can we get this person to verify this? Have you checked this out? That goes, when the fact checkers raise questions, it goes back to the editor. And in every case, the editor said, no, we've decided. We're comfortable with what we have.
Why do you think they did this? Why?
They really believed, it comes out over and over again, that Jackie, the alleged victim, was telling a real story, and that her lapses, like she would just disappear when they were asking inconvenient questions, or she would fill in with information that turned out not to be fully checkable. They just thought that she was so traumatized that this was in keeping with how a victim who's been raped would act. And so they believed her. They overbelieved her.
Well, also because they wanted it to be true, because from a self-serving purpose, they had hot property here.
Yeah, that's right.
They had a hot story. They did. And that's, you know, the report points that out, too, that, yes, you have to be sensitive to someone who's gone through trauma, rape or war or horrible crime, but you still have to verify. You still cannot take their word. The first thing you would say to that person is, I would like to feature you in this story, but we're going to talk to the man who did this. We're going to talk to the police. I'm going to ask you many questions. And if you want to be part of the project, you have to go along with this. And they didn't.
And what if she said, okay, these are my conditions, which apparently she did.
She did. And they accepted
them. These are my conditions, and they accepted them.
That's the whole thing. They should have dumped her and found another rape victim. It's not as if there's a scarcity of people who really were raped that should have been there.
In fact, I saw, somebody can remind me, I'm probably wrong, but I saw a poll, a national poll, which said one-third of young women said that they had been sexually assaulted. One-third. Mm-hmm. Extraordinary.
It's a lot.
Yes.
And the part of it is sexual assault, what the definition is, has expanded quite a bit.
Right.
To
be groped.
To be groped. But still, it's the beginning of a pattern, but also just the continuum of sexual assault.
To the point where we have in the New York City subways, signs warning about people pressing up against
That's right. And, you know, and I will say this till the day I die, and that is Bill Clinton gave permission when he said, it's all according what you think is.
Yeah.
What sex is, that fellatio, I hope we can say that on
here. Yeah, you just did.
Okay, I just did. Is not sex. And that's really a problem.
All right, we got to take a break here. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. We didn't get into the fact that this college, that this university, has been wronged. And their reputation is now severely damaged. And there are, what is it, 9:30 that we have to go to break here? All right, we'll take a break now. We got to jump back to this when we come back. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable on WAMC. Monday morning, 9:34 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We're halfway through the roundtable panel for Monday. Alan Shartok is here, Rosemary Armeo and Libby Post, and you at home. Email address is roundtable@wamc.org. And Alan, we have some email.
We do. Okay, so from Alex, roundtable. This isn't the story. The real story is how these false rape allegations are made into a scandal when real rapes are almost never reported or talked about in the media. To your credit, you have brought this up, but we're still adding to the problem by scandalizing this supposed false account further because it supports the narrative that victims of sexual assault should be doubted and scrutinized. Well, I think I disagree. I think it's important to do it, as you say, and do more. This is only my reaction. And do more about accurate reporting on rape.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I also think that if somebody is going to do wrong here, and Rosemary's the big expert on this because she teaches the subject, then we have to call them out for it.
Absolutely. And really, the problem with this letter is it presumes that the media, which we show is so incompetent they can't even check out a story, has enough togetherness to figure out, here's the narrative, we'll advance. It just doesn't happen.
But this letter also points out, it undermines every other woman. This kind of reporting, this story undermines every other woman who comes forward.
Which is why you have to say to the people who perpetrated this, you can't do that, and we're going to hold you up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fascinated, by the way, by the strategy, and clearly it was a strategy of the magazine to bring in this top flight Columbia Journalism School, you know, to do this study. I think that that redounds to their benefit. I think
their fear of lawsuits is what it.
They can now say we took this super seriously. We handled it like the New York Times did with Jason Blair. But they're not going to fire
the
editor responsible.
Should the managing editor be fired for this?
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
And the woman shouldn't be allowed to write for them anymore either.
Yeah.
I mean, they may be wrong.
She may be now the most thoroughly checked of all reporters,
but I would not trust her. Yeah.
I would not hire her.
She believed somebody who made up the story. She didn't make up the story herself like the those other folks.
She was gullible.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was some more. Ken says, more than 400,000 rape kits haven't been processed. Many hundreds of thousands, millions more aren't even given collected because of lack of funding. What's that in capital? Does that tell you about a male-dominated society's attitude about rape? All right, Bonnie says, folks, plagiarism and cheating are the crimes best left to colleges. Rape and robbery and murder should be saved for our judicial system. Also, lousy investigative reporting may have, in this case, nullified any chance of knowing the truth. He said, she said, is as old as the Bible. It certainly is. But the scales remain tilted in doubt of a woman's word. And that's from Bonnie.
I intimated before the break that the college has been wronged here, and I think I saw some raised eyebrows.
The college was wronged, and I could see them bringing a suit, but I hope the college officials will read that report. There's a lot in there about the college mistrusting the press instead of calling in the reporter or the editor and saying, look, here's the deal. Hid behind, oh, no, this is all controversial. This is sexual harassment. We can't talk about it.
Were they not talking about it?
They looked like they were stonewalling.
For legal reasons, however?
There was, if you read the report, there was a division. There were some lower level people who said, we need to talk to them. This is going to come out wrong. And the top official at the university in charge of this said, nope, we're not talking. We don't have to. And they're right. Legally, they didn't.
Right.
But the paper made them, it said, oh, we must be onto something. The school won't even talk to us.
It's how,
it was not good.
It's how universities and college campuses deal with these kinds of incidents.
Right.
Whether they have an internal process and keep it internal or whether they bring outside law enforcement into it.
Yeah.
And it can go either way. You know, the argument can go either way. The work I did on the task force with SUNY, I mean, we debated this going back and forth, you know, should the university or the college be responsible? Isn't that a better place for it to be? Does the woman want to go to the police? Should that be the automatic thing? I mean, it's you know, you have to take the concerns of the victim into account.
And indeed, it looks as if the University of Virginia did do that, but they were not willing to tell the reporter, this is what we did. We got a case and we handled it really in the prescribed
way. But the thing is, they could have said to them, we had a case,
right,
and we found nothing.
They could have done that. And that's what they didn't do.
Right.
That's what
if they really did find nothing.
So here's a sad letter from Paul. My daughter was raped by three high school boys 25 years ago. Last year, she committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
As I listened to the debate, the sad thing is nothing has changed. The girl was at fault and the boys falsely accused. I don't think we said that, Paul. I think in all due, and by the way, we are so sorry, but I don't think we said that the girl was at fault and the boys falsely accused. We said in this case, that's what happened.
We said in this case, the girl was believed by reporters who are at fault.
But,
and there were no boys accused. There were no named boys.
But the thing is that is what will happen. What happened to Paul's daughter will happen to many other women, you know, and women aren't believed by and large when this happens, and the boys are believe that they didn't do anything
wrong. What makes you think that the women aren't believed?
Because the law enforcement doesn't take this
seriously. I heard what you guys
have
said. But I'll tell you something. My sympathies, when I hear a story like this, is to believe them.
Sure.
I think that's what happened here.
I do, too. Clearly I do. But, you know, when you go out into the real world, and we're in a little bubble here, when you go out into the real world, and a secretary accuses a boss of rape, and the boss has the economic advantage and the legal advantage, they're going to think that the secretary's a gold digger and was spurned. I mean, that kind of stuff happens all the time, and there are plenty of women like Paul's daughter, who find no way out of this, but to take their own lives because of the damage the assault has done to them.
I would say this Rolling Stone, the poor reporting sets that case and the case you just make back 20 years.
All of it does. Yeah. Absolutely.
I agree.
Absolutely. Women's accounts will now be...
Doubted even more with
a bigger question mark.
Oh, is this like University
UVA?
Of Virginia?
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's very, very difficult and very hard for women on campus these days. And you know, my thing is they should get rid of the frats, but that's not going to take care of all sexual assault.
How big is the lawsuit going to be, Rosemary?
I think it's going to be big and settled out of court.
And will one of the preconditions be that the editor, managing editor, say goodbye?
No, I don't think they can do that. Rolling Stone actually apologized right away, effectively retracted the article, re-retracted it after this report, as you said, set up a national study. They have a very strong legal case that they didn't act in bad faith. They thought it was right when problems were called to their attention. They reacted very responsibly. So that kind of mitigates against a reward.
I know they're going to sue or someone's going to sue, but for what?
Well, I think the fraternity and the university can both sue for damage. Yeah,
slander.
For defamation is
defamation
the case. Yeah.
So Stephen says, I initially believed the Rolling Stone article. I also initially believed the Janet Cook Washington Post article in 1980. Both articles took two national problems, heroin and sexual assault, made them even more horrific.
Do you know what the Janet Cook story was? That was really famous, won a Pulitzer Prize, and then it was revealed. She wrote that an 8-year-old boy was being injected with heroin by his drug-dealing father. The entire thing was made up. There was no such thing. And interestingly, also the fault of editors, because in that own newsroom in the Washington Post at the time, reporters said, this makes no sense. What drug dealer is going to risk his very profitable business injecting a kid? He goes to school. The teachers are going to see this. That's crazy. Yep. It's not true. Plus, Janet Cook can't find her way around Washington downtown, much less Anacostia, where it happened. And the editors did not listen to her because, Alan, she was a beautiful, a woman they wanted to believe in.
Yep.
So, again, terrible reporting.
All right. The email address here, roundtable@wamc.org. I threw this article out as a possible topic last night, and both Rosemary and Libby came in this morning and both independently said, boy, I love
Amazing
this article.
Article.
So this is, in a way, thematically tied to what we're talking about today. From the New York Times, taking feminist battle to China's streets and landing in jail. I'll quote here from Andrew Jacobs' piece. The young Chinese feminists shaved their heads to protest inequality in higher education and stormed men's restrooms to highlight the indignities women faced in their prolonged waits at public toilets. Now, five of them, core members of China's new feminist movement, sit in jail accused of provoking social instability. And these are one of the interesting things about this case. It happened on the eve of International Women's Day.
Yep.
Also, the charges, I got to get them right here because I can't believe what the charge of picking quarrels and provoking troubles, which carries a maximum 5-year sentence in China, is being used as a pretext for this. And I know you both have some thoughts on this case.
Well, I want to say it's not just about the having to wait in the restrooms. It's also about domestic violence.
Yeah,
it's also
serious issues.
Yeah, there are very much not that much more, but there are very serious issues here. There are also gender issues. One of the women is bisexual, and we know that the Chinese government has not been very open to the LGBT community. There's much about sexual violence that, you know, it's okay. What the story said, what I found interesting was with the rise of the open markets in China, so the reintroduction of capitalism under a communist rule, which really is just fascism, you know, we now have a reversal back to really the sexual stereotypes that we saw in China, where men ruled the day and could openly beat their wives in public. And these women are pushing against that, and they're in jail.
I apologize for making this Feminism Day, but it's a fascinating story out of China. Mao Zedong was actually really good to women.
Mm-hmm.
When he came in, he banned a whole lot of discriminatory practices, including foot binding, a very good thing.
Yes.
Stop wearing stilettos, we're going back. And this stuff that the Chinese women are asking for is really routine in the West. You know, the demonstrations against domestic violence and shaving their head and all that. It's kind of protest theater, which when you have a First Amendment is accepted. The Chinese go nuts over that. So my question is, what is it about women's demand that so unhinged dictatorships?
No, I think this is a question. I think they are more fearful of the fact that they used social media and to organize very successfully. And I think this scares the living daylights.
That does, and I think Libby's also right about the bisexual and lesbian things. Mm-hmm. You know, in the American feminist movement, it was that was a contentious issue. Like, oh,
we were the Lavender Menace.
Yeah, but. It, because they were kind of outrageous and less fearful than straight women, that really pushed feminism, I believe.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The same thing is happening around the world. It's fascinating.
Mm, I'm glad we brought this one to the table. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. This is a good spot. We'll take a quick break and then come back, check the mailbag, and then talk about President Obama selling his Iran deal.
Support comes from Homebrew Emporium, New Rochelle and North Greenbush, New York, West Boylston and Boston, Massachusetts, providing beer and winemaking equipment and supplies from beginners to professionals. University at Albany offering a weekend MBA program for 22 months, including an international trip, 518-956-8330. NBT Bank offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. And from The Linda, presenting Help for You and Your Child with Autism, Saturday, April 11th at 10 a.m., thelinda.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC, 9:48, well, almost 9:48 on a Monday morning. Libby Post, Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, and yours truly, Ray Graff. You at home, and the email bag filling up once again, Alan.
Yes, that's true, and I just want to make a plea to all of you out there who are sending missiles to us, and that is no abbreviations, like B4, you know, the letter 4.
Oh, okay.
I have a hard enough time reading on the fly. Anyway, okay. Dear folks, I'm 63 years old, and I remember clearly the moment for me in which I felt women could say no, be believed. There was a movie on TV in which that was the storyline. That was about 25 years ago, B4. Then, if a woman wore black lace panties, for example, was raped, the prosecution and social line was that she asked for it because she was wearing black lace panties. I remember a kind of before and after in my personal life about rape. I don't feel safe 25 years ago because I didn't feel safe 25 years ago because of social perception about women and rape. Thank you. That's from Cheryl.
Okay.
And Robert says, in my youth, I was a very active dater. Some of the women I dated were furious when things ended. Some said all kinds of terrible things about me. Some said all kinds of sorts of terrible things about me. Yeah, if the culture of the 70s included today's focus on rape, I have no doubt I would have been the victim of such false accusations. Angry people lie to get even, and very angry people can do terrible, terrible harm by their lives.
Bob, it sounds like you were asking for it.
Well, now you're being funny.
No, you know, I think everybody has a point of view here, Rosemary.
And, I know, and I can mock it, right?
First
Amendment.
You're a panelist.
Well, yes, okay. So I think that's
okay.
I hope so.
All right. So President Barack Obama casting the Iran talks as part of a broader foreign policy doctrine that sees American power as a safeguard that gives him the ability to take calculated risks. The president staunchly defended a framework nuclear agreement with Iran as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to prevent a bomb and bring longer-term stability to the Middle East. He made the rounds, and his advisors have been making the rounds on the weekend shows. He was interviewed in the New York Times by Thomas Friedman. He said it's personally difficult for him to hear his administration accused of not looking out for Israel's interests. Predictably, perhaps, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is urging world powers to step up the pressure on Iran as they finalize this deal. He says it's a deeply flawed framework of an agreement. So let's throw that out there. There'll be much discussion today and presumably for the next week or so in Washington on this. Republicans, as expected, say we need to take a look at this. Even some Democrats are. Dianne Feinstein was also on the news this weekend saying, Bibi, enough. Stop. Which, if I'm Bibi and I'm surrounded by enemies, I say, I'll stop when I feel I'm safe. All right, let's throw it out there.
Well, you know, I can understand everybody's position here. I really can. I don't live in Israel. You know, if you're surrounded and people make it clear and are making it clear that people should throw Israel into the sea, then you have a position, especially since we know the Iranians are funding the people who are after Israel. That goes to motive, and we know what they're doing. On the other hand, it seems clear to me that this is a good deal for the United States. Why? Because in 10 years or 15 years, things may well have changed. Things may well have gotten better. Look, this is a country with tremendous military resources. If, as we used to say on the West Side, the Iranians get wise, get wise meaning misbehave, this country is not without its resources if that happens. So, from my perspective, I think it's a chance. Of course, it is a chance. It's well worth taking.
Yeah, I think diplomacy is really difficult, and it's hard to know which side is right. And I had the same reaction you did, Alan, that, you know, what Netanyahu is saying kind of makes sense, as does what the president says. But they've made the best calculation here. And the ones I resent are Republicans who just seem mm-hmm. to be just knee-jerk saying, yeah. No, if Obama and Kerry were involved, it can't be good. That's that's just crazy. Jeb Bush disappointed me.
Jim Baker was on CNN this weekend saying, basically, on GPS, saying basically that, you know, and he's going to be out there stumping for Jeb Bush. And, you know, my attitude is if you can get him inside the tent,
sure,
try to get him inside the tent.
Yeah.
We have an opportunity here. Iran hasn't wanted to sit down with us since 1980 right. when, you know, everything
fell apart.
And now they are. And, you know, yes, they're not saying we will support the existence of Israel. That's pretty clear. But if we can take away their nuclear capabilities and we can make it a little bit safer and we can start normalizing relationships with them.
Seems like a plus.
It seems like a good idea. It just does.
The other thing this story does is show how close Israeli and American policy is connected. This is not a treaty that includes Israel.
Right.
There's nothing in here that stops Israel, for example, which has a bomb, to drop something on Iran if it feels that endangered. Yet it's all the wording as if, you know, the United States is endangering this third country.
Well, there's talking points
just
out
joined,
there
right? I know. It's just crazy.
And then there's the political aspect here at home. You have Bob Corker, who is the head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who says, oh, no, Senate has a rightful role in this, too. And so there are the constitutional angles. And in the old days, president went and made a treaty.
That was it.
Yeah.
The last time we said no to a treaty was the League of Nations.
Well, the Kyoto environmental treaty, also rejected.
Right. But, you know, this is Tom Cotton all over again.
It is.
You know.
Write a letter.
And, you know, give me a break. I mean, this is the same man who this week, after all the Indiana and the Arkansas laws, went public to say gays in America should feel lucky because their hands aren't being cut off and they're not being hung.
Oh.
Well,
to that was, yes, Massa.
One thing's for sure about this situation, if the Saudis continue to battle it out with Iran's proxies in Yemen, and they become more head-to-head, and if there is a nuclear arms race in the Middle East, you can say hello to $10 a gallon gas very soon. And that's going to hit you at home.
Yes, but does that mean that we should bomb?
No, but you better be careful when you You better make a good deal. That's all I can say.
Right. I still want to know why we didn't have lower gas prices when we invaded Iraq.
Yeah, well, that's there was no relationship between one and the other. That's
aggressive war and high gas prices. That was a total loss.
If there's a nuclear arms race and somebody sets off a bomb, we're not going to have to worry about how much gas is.
Yeah.
Well, the arms race alone will drive prices up. All right, so 2 minutes left here, 3 minutes left. Huge sports night.
Yay. Oh, boy.
Huge sports day. Wisconsin takes on Duke in the NCAA men's basketball final tonight. Wisconsin knocked off Kentucky on Saturday, which
was
amazing. Did you see it? It was a shocker.
Yeah.
The women's basketball has been so UConn is so amazing. They just crushed they crushed them last night. It was
They crushed them here last week. I was at the game.
Crushed Maryland last night. Notre Dame beat South Carolina by one, which is one of the greatest basketball. Did you see that basketball game?
Yeah. Oh, no, I didn't.
I think women's basketball is in so many ways better than men's basketball at the elite level. It's a team game. It is classic basketball.
It's not about who makes the most dunks.
Oh, God.
Because they don't.
The Notre Dame game was just a thing of beauty, and it went back and forth. It was great. So that's tomorrow night. UConn going for a third straight title. This is a rematch of last year's women's final when Notre Dame lost to UConn.
I'm going to watch it.
You must.
I'm going to watch it just because of this recommendation.
No, we were at the game last Saturday where UConn just wiped the floor with Texas. I mean, it was like over 50 points spread. It was unbelievable.
They're a true dynasty. Right. I mean, they're like the 20s and 30s Yankees.
Right.
They're,
from a political point of view, that's good when
absolutely.
UConn beats
Texas. Absolutely. But there was some of that going on for me, too. But you know, and then the next game was Louisville and Dayton, and Louisville should have beat Dayton, and Dayton was really pretty scrappy. And
Dayton has a good program, men's program as well.
And so this should be an interesting game, you know. And I know that the coaches don't like each other. They inferred that last night. There was some kind of thing going.
They always do that,
you know.
So. And then we have baseball.
Oh, baseball! Big
baseball. Baseball begins to. Well, there was one game last night, the Cubs and Cardinals. I don't count that. Today is opening day. The Cardinals won 3-0.
That's too bad.
Okay.
And today the Yankees are at 1. I think they are in the Bronx. They are playing Toronto Blue Jays.
Yes.
And
then
at
the
3 o'clock
the
is
Nationals.
The Red Sox. You have to give lip service to the Red Sox.
Oh, okay, sorry,
Red Sox and the Phillies at 3 o'clock.
Well, we got Christina here, and Christina believes in it. My son believes in the Red Sox.
A lot of people do.
A fan. Mm.
Yeah. They're wrong, but they do.
Then you have your Mets, which you keep telling me are going to win everything.
The Mets are in Washington to take on the Nationals.
They're doing much better.
The Nationals. Well, we'll find out.
Now what?
Than they have in the past.
There was a lot of ifs with the Mets. If
there
this guy can
is.
Pitch, if this guy can catch, if this guy can hit.
There's always that.
It's all good.
The thing is, this is a true test because the Washington Nationals, the cream of the National League East, have completely decimated the Mets. If the Mets even won 6 or 7 games against the Nationals last year, they would have had a winning record. But they won 3 out of 18 against the Nationals.
It would be disrespectful to the government.
Well, you think so?
You know, but I remember when the Nationals were a national joke.
Well, they were the Expos before that, and that
and
didn't work
out
so well.
And then there was the Mets. Yeah. The Mets. I'm old enough to remember when the Mets were the
were
joke.
Great. I remember them. They were great.
All right, the Mets will win the division, and that's the end of the story.
You think so?
Yes, they will win the division, and they will go on deep into October.
You know, yesterday I was watching real quickly. I'll tell you, I was watching number 42 and crying my eyes out.
Great movie.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole joke was Pittsburgh. It was everybody's being. Yeah. But then Branch Rickey, which nobody knows, went on to manage that team.
He was incredible.
All right, well, we're over
we're
time.
Done.
So thank you to Libby and Alan and Rosemary and to you at home, and then there's more to come.